Recording has started.
We're holding on the top line of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Mishnah said, B'seicha kein, if you set aside the birds inside the nest, inside one of those cubbies, or matzah lifnei kein, and you found them outside the cubby afterwards, asurin, then they're also, because we can't assume they're the same ones. So, like we had yesterday, the Gemara says, Lema Messiah Leila Rav Chanina. Can we say that this Mishnah supports what Rav Chanina said, as we said yesterday, the Amar Rav Chanina, Roiv Vekarev Halachacha Roiv, that if you have a majority versus something that's close, then you go according to the majority. So again, the same thing over here. You might assume that they are, you might assume that they're the close by ones. You set them out up inside the cubby, you find them outside it, so therefore they're the Karev. On the other hand, there's many more birds in the outside world, and you would go according to the Rav, and that's why we'd be saying these are also. So that would prove Rav Chanina's point. And again, Amar Abaya Badaf, like we said yesterday, Abaya says that no, we're talking about over here that you have a ledge on the outside of it. The birds are nesting, are sitting on the ledge over there, outside the cubbies, and therefore they're equally just as much Karev as the ones that were inside. You don't have to worry about all the roiv that's out in the outside world, but you do have to worry about the ones that are on the dock.
So that applies only when there is a ledge.
Yeah, that's right. Rava Amar, whereas Rava says no, you don't need there to be a ledge. B'shnei kinin zulamayla mizua skin, and we're talking about where there are two cubbies, one on top of the other.
Right.
So needless to say, if you set them aside in the bottom cubby and not the ones in the top cubby, and then you come on Yom Tov and you find different ones in the top in the bottom one, and you don't find any in the top one, da asira. And then we definitely have to say they're also da munin, because then what do we have to assume? Hanach azlu la alma, that the original ones that were in the bottom cubby went away. Hanach ishtarbuv, and these climb down, v'nachos, and they came down. Because the Gemara is going to say soon, we're actually talking about birds that are not capable of flying. They're only capable of walking around. But they are able to climb down from one level to the next.
So they cannot go up, but they can go...
No, we'll get to going up in a minute. They can go up maybe also, but in other words, if they were actually ones that were able to fly, then you don't even need that. Of course they could fly in and out. But we're talking about even if they can't fly... There's no question, though, they're able to walk. So if they're able to walk, they're also able to climb down. So then definitely there's reason to say that they'd be also. But even if it's the other way around, what if you set aside the ones, you designated the ones in the top cubby, not the ones in the body, or in the bottom cubby, then you come and you find birds in the top one, and you don't find any in the bottom one. Hanach nami asiri. Even then, we say it's asir. Daminut, because we still say hanach azul alma. The original ones from the top cubby went away. The hanach and the ones from the bottom saruchi sorich. They were able to climb up or sliku, and they went up.
As opposed to the other way.
In other words, it's more of a given that birds should be able to climb down than that they or even fall down maybe than that they should be able to climb up. So therefore, what we're saying is that when we say b'seicha kein u'matzah lifnei kein, it means you designated them you designated them inside the cubby. Now you found them. When we say lifnei kein, it doesn't mean in front of it, like Abaya is saying that there's a ledge there. It means that you found them in the same place as the original ones, but they're not the same ones. So therefore, there's reason. So whether they're on the top or on the bottom, there is that possibility that there is that possibility. You're not worried about the ones from the outside world. Maybe we don't hold with what Rav Chanina says, although in fact the halacha is like him. But our Mishnah, at least, we can't prove it one way or the other. But it's not we're worried about ones from the outside world. We're worrying about the ones from the other cubby, above or below it.
But you're worried only in one direction?
No, you're worried in both directions. That's what we're saying.
So why do we say...
That's what we're saying. Needless to say, if the one that they're able to go down, but even they're able to go up.
Right.
They're able to climb up.
Right.
And therefore we have to be concerned that they're not the right ones, and therefore they're mukta.
And we're equally concerned despite the fact that they cannot fly.
Right. That's because even though they can't fly, they can still climb.
They can still climb.
Yeah.
Can we get in the front?
I don't know how they can climb.
Yeah, we started already. Tosfos Yeshanim over here, it's brought in Maseres Hashas, Marshall also quotes it, points out, how come, we said yesterday that Kid Amar Abaya, like Abaya said in the second case, that there's a ledge, so also we can apply that case of ledge to the first case. Okay. Why didn't Abaya give his answer on the first part of the Mishnah? There's two cases in the Mishnah that we're talking about where we have to use Abaye's answer of a ledge.
Right.
One is the case. One is the case where you had black ones in this cubby, white ones in this cubby, and come Yom Tov, you find them flipped around. So then Abaye says, it's not that we're worried about that other black or white ones might have come from the outside world, but we're concerned that they might have been perching there on the ledge, and then they went in when they had the chance to. Here we brought it again.
Right.
But yesterday the Gemara had said, Kid Amar Abaye, like Abaye says, Badaf, in our second case over here, where they were inside and now you found them outside, like Abaye said over there in that case, which we just quoted now, that there's a case of a ledge, so also we can apply it to there. So why didn't Abaye himself give his answer on the first case of the Mishnah? So there's a few different answers that Mefarshim give. One of them, very straightforward, is because over here, you have Rava arguing with him and saying you don't need the answer of the ledge. You can find another answer. So therefore, Abaye didn't feel the need to provide an answer in the first one because it's fairly obvious. Mm. But there's other possibilities. Also, for example, maybe Abaye doesn't agree. Maybe Abaye doesn't agree with Rav Chanina either. Mm-hmm. Therefore, he had no reason to bring this answer at all. Anyway, then the Mishnah had said,
"Vim ein sham." We can just examine the case without the ledge to see what is.
Well, that's the thing. We're saying that in both cases, the Gemara uses in the first case, we use that as the only possible answer because the only way that we can say that the Mishnah the only way that we can say the Mishnah doesn't definitively prove Rav Chanina's point is if you have a ledge. In the second case, you have two possibilities: a ledge or two different floors. In point of fact, the halacha is like Rav Chanina. After all, that yes, when there's Roiv versus Karev, you do go according to the Roiv. We said yesterday about the Egla Rufa. So therefore, you don't really need any of these answers anyway. Even if you don't have a ledge, and even if you don't have two layers, you still have the problem that birds might have come from the outside world. Mm-hmm. Although then it gets into in Shulchan Aruch and Mefarshim, it talks about. Then already it's not so simple because for example, if the other bird houses in that area belong to Goyim, you may not have the issue. Birds that belong to Goyim and then flew into this birdhouse are not necessarily Mukta, because the Goyim himself doesn't put him out of mind on Yom Tov. He's able to kill him on Yom Tov. And we'll learn in the second parak cases about where a goy brings you a present of food on Yom Tov. You may have other issues involved of trapping or of other malachas, but if there's no issue of that, for example, here we're talking birds that don't need to be trapped, they can't fly yet, then that may not be such an issue. So then you would still need these answers. Then you would still need these answers about the ledge or about the two floors in order for it to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mishnah had said, if there's no other birds around there except for those, then they're mutter, because then the ones that you found in front obviously must be the same ones as from before. They just came out to the front. The Gemara asks, hey chidami, what case are we talking about? Ilema b'mefurachin, are you talking about birds that are already flying? Can't you say the other ones flew away? And these are others. Ella b'medadin, so are we talking about then that the birds are not capable of flying yet, they can only walk? Medadin literally means like they toddle, like a baby toddling, because that's you notice when birds walk, they kind of walk funny, they bob as they go along,
like pigeons.
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about, is pigeons. Yeah. So then we have to consider what's the case. If there's another nest within 50 amas of there, then they are able to walk. The Gemara establishes in Bava Basra that birds, fledgling birds that aren't able to fly yet, will walk up to 50 amas. Therefore, we have dinim over there about the chum figured it out. The chum either they observed the habits of birds and concluded this, or sayed Hashem the Yireya. They knew it with Kabbalah. Whatever it is, the Gemara establishes over there it's a given. It's a fact that birds like that will not walk more than 50 amos. The Gemara even has a story over there that Rabbi Yirmiya one time asks, what happens if you find a bird with one leg inside 50 amos and the other one outside? Are you allowed to keep it? Do you assume it belongs to the...
You cannot keep it if it's outside.
Because if it's within 50 amos, you have to assume it belongs... You can't keep it. You have to assume it belongs to the owner of the birdhouse. But if it's outside 50 amos, you can, because then somebody must have dropped it there. So your Bimia goes and asks the question, what if one leg is inside 50 and one leg outside 50? And in fact, the Chachamim were upset with him. They threw him out of the Beis Medrash. Because they said, look, you've got to understand, when the Chachamim say 50 amos, it means 50 amos. Not even one leg more.
And they threw him out?
So they threw him out for that.
For good?
No, eventually the Gemara mentions in Bava Basra that later on he replied to a different question in a way that they saw that now he accepts that what the Chachamim say is true, and so they allowed him back in. Yeah. Anyway. Rabbi Yumia, one of the Amoraim. So anyway, if there's another nest within 50 amos, then again you have to be concerned that other birds may have come there. The idol like a cane beseh chamish mama, and if there's no other nest within 50 amos, pshita de mutar, and then of course it's mutar. De amma ukva bar chama, kol amadada eni madada yosem chamish mama. We just said there's an absolute rule that birds that can walk can never walk more than 50 amos.
Without stopping.
No, at 50 amos period. They're not going to leave
stopping,
their nest.
Oh, that's what it is. They'll leave their nest.
They'll leave their nest for walks of up to 50 amos.
And then they come back.
So what are we talking about over here in our Mishnah? The Mishnah has to tell us, you should know, if there's no other ones around there, then they're mutter. Either it's very obvious, or there's no need to mention, or in fact there are possibilities that there could be other birds. The answer is, la'olam de'ikah kein b'seh chamishim amah, we are talking about that there's other nests within 50 amos, u'chgren d'kaima b'keren zavis. But, for example, you have a case where the other nest is around the corner. You can see the diagram here in Rashi, that you have the corner of a house sticks out between the two nests, between the two birdhouses. So so you might think still the birds are able to walk up to 50 amos, so they may well have walked from one nest to the other. No, kamash malon. Any time that a bird will walk, but it can still look back and see its original nest, medada, then it will walk. And if not, it won't. So here, we're going around the corner, it's not going to see its original nest anymore. It won't go. It won't turn that corner.
It's going to go straight.
It'll go straight. So therefore, you don't have to worry about it. Even if they're within 50 amos of each other, you don't have to worry that one of them walk to the other, and therefore that these are other birds.
It's amazing. Because that's what they want to be. They want to be within 50 amos of their nest.
Of their nest,
to see it. For their children or...
No, for themselves. These are birds that aren't flying yet. They're afraid to leave the nest too far, because how are they going to get back? Yeah.
That's amazing.
Mishnah says, you're not allowed to pick up the eli, which we talked about yesterday, is a big heavy wooden beam that they use usually for crushing wheat. To cut meat on it, to use it as a cutting board. Or Basil Matirin, whereas Basil says it's mutter. Another din, you're not allowed to put down the skin of an animal that you shechted on Yomtov in front of people who will trample on it to start the process of tanning it. Veloyag bihenu, and you're not even allowed to pick up the skin. Elam ken yesh all of kazayis baser, yesh ima kazayis baser, unless there is at least a kazayis of meat with it, because then the skin serves as a handle for it. Uvasilah matir, and uvasilah matir. So in the case of the Eli, we talked about yesterday that the idea is we said yesterday there's two possibilities, but actually I misspoke about one of them. One way of looking at this, and actually Rashi and Tosfos argue what the based on a Gemara and Shabbos, what the correct understanding of this machlokas is about the Eli. One way of looking at it is that the Eli is a kli shemalachta le'isur. It's a keli that's usually used for a purpose which is also on Yom Tov. So therefore, Beis Shammai is saying you're not allowed to use it at all, and Beis Hillel is saying you're allowed to use it the same way as you can use a hammer to crack
in a
nuts.
Different way, right?
Yeah. The other way of looking at it is that, and this is how Tosfos takes it, based on a Gemara and Shabbos, is that the Eli is actually a different kind of Muktzah. I was mentioning yesterday that the second possibility is not even considered a Keli. It's Muktzah Machmas Gufay. That's not so. The other possibility is it's Muktzah Machmas Chisorin Kis. It's Muktzah because it's a very expensive utensil. You would never use it for anything other than its normal purpose, because you don't want it to get ruined. That's a stronger kind of Muktzah. Yeah. On Shabbos, you're not even allowed to, on Shabbos, for example, you're not even allowed to move something that's Muktzah Machmas Chisorin Kis, even where you need it. Let's start with Gufa. For example, one example
because
of Muktzah.
What, because in his case, you break it? Or
yeah, because you normally don't use it. So that, right. In other words, unlike, for example, let's take, for example, a classic case of Muktzah Machmas Isser, for example, is a hammer. Mm-hmm. You normally use it to drive in nails. You're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, so it's Muktzah. But if you need it to crack nuts, you're allowed to.
Right.
Muktzah Machmas Chisorin Kis, a classic example of it, is a Shechita knife.
Right.
A Shechita knife, it's not... Of course, it's true, you're not allowed to shecht on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, I mean. But it's more than that. You're not going to use the shechita knife for any regular cutting because you don't want to dull it. You don't want to nick it. Mm. It would be expensive to resharpen it properly. Mm. So there, and therefore, the din is, even if you decide on Shabbos, you know what, I don't have any other knife available. I want to chop an apple. I want to cut up an apple or a piece of meat or whatever. You're not allowed to. It's muktzeh machmas chaserin kis. It's off limits for everything.
Once it's nicked, you cannot repair it?
No, you could. It's just hard to.
Right.
That's an example of muktzeh machmas chaserin kis. I mean, there's other examples.
So in this case of the Eli,
according to Tosfos' way of looking at it, the Eli itself is muktzeh machmas chaserin kis. You would never normally use it for anything else, for any purpose other than crushing wheat grains, because you don't want it to get ruined.
I see what you're saying. In other words, to giving it a different usage might ruin it.
So therefore, Bishama is saying, well, that's a given then. It's muktzeh machmas chaserin kis, so therefore off limits. Basil is saying, no. The fact is, true, normally you don't use it for anything else, but in this case, you do want to use it in order to enhance your simchas yom tov, so you'll be able to have meat at your table. You need a cutting board. Therefore, you should be allowed to.
And there's no concern about chaserin kis.
Evidently, you yourself are not worried about chaserin kis in this case. Even though, yes, before yom tov, you were worried about chaserin kis, but you can change your mind, basically. So in Shulchan Aruch, it actually brings both possibilities. Many other Rishonim argue whose understanding is correct, Rashi or Tosfos. So in Shulchan Aruch, it actually brings both of them. As far as the Eli itself, in Shulchan Aruch, it defines it as something which is muktzeh machmas, which is muktzeh machmas iser, because normally it's used for something which is also. And therefore, we're saying that you're allowed to move it. But on the other hand, there is also the din in Shulchan Aruch that even as far as something that's muktzeh machmas chaserin kis, in certain cases, you're also allowed to use it when it'll enhance your yom tov. So to go back to our example of the shechita knife, I don't know if this is an actual example, because I don't know if this is taka allowed, but one potential example might be to take a shechita knife to chop up meat on yom tov.
That you could.
That you might be allowed.
The usual.
Because even though, yeah.
Right.
Well, that, actually, a shechita knife is not really a good example because you are allowed to shecht on Yom Tov. So it's not muktzeh machmas chaserin kis on Yom Tov in the first place. But okay, other possible examples.
Mm-hmm. On Shabbos?
We're not talking about Shabbos. We're talking about Yom Tov. For Simchas Yom Tov, we're matir. That's as far as the Eli. As far as the skin, the issue is that we mentioned yesterday the idea that Beshama is saying the skin has no possible use on Yom Tov, and if you were to start stepping on it or whatever, then it would be the beginning of the malacha of Ma'abed, which is a malacha of tanning the leather. Whereas Basil said yesterday that you would be able to sit on it, even though it's true you wouldn't be very comfortable sitting on it. Maybe you don't normally sit on a fresh piece of skin. You wait till it's dried out, but still you could.
Could use it.
We'll talk about soon, though, that there's other possibilities also. Why?
Isn't that also something that gets it more towards its prepared state?
That's what we're saying. So that's why Bishama is saying you can't do that. You know, it's tan leather on Yom Tov.
Right.
Tana, so we learn in a braisa as far as the Eli, the Shavin, both of them agree, she'im cuts of olive basar, that once you did chop up meat on it, she also lataltale, that now you're not allowed to move it. Because at that point, you've already accomplished what you needed to. So now, according to Rashi's way of looking at it, you would be able to move it afterwards again if you need the place. You know, you put it on the table, let's say, you chopped up the meat, now it's in the way, so you can move it someplace else, you can put it back.
What happens if you need it for some other reason in another part?
Then you can pick it up again. As opposed to, according to Tosfos' way of looking at it, it's muktzeh machmas chaserin kis. Fine, you did what you need to with it, but then afterwards it's muktzeh, yeah. Amar Abaya, machloikus be'eli. This machloikus is specifically about this eli, this heavy wooden piece that you use for chopping, for grinding up grain. But if we're talking about a chopping block, the kind that butchers use to chop up meat, mutter. Divrei Hakol mutter. Then everybody agrees it's mutter. This is pshita. Well, of course, eli
tana.
Tavra literally means breaking. Garmi means bones. So it means like a chopping block, like butchers use, where they take a big chunk of meat and they chop it up there. Yeah. So that you're allowed to. Well, of course, Elitinan, the Mishnah had said, only a grinding thing.
Right.
The answer is, Maru detema hua din dafer la tavra gami nami. You might have thought to say, if it weren't for Abaya's point, that maybe even a tavra gami, a chopping block, should also be also. Bahaida katani eli, and the fact that the Mishnah mentions an eli, laidecha kochan de besilla, would only be to tell you how far besilla goes in being matir, dafila dovash, malachta la isu, nami shodu, that they're even being matir, something which is normally used for isu, as opposed to a tavra gami, which is meant for chopping meat. Kamash Malon, that's the chiddush. The chiddush is that even Beis Shammai would agree on the Tavra Gami is fine. Ikadam, really a different version, is Amar Abaya, that Abaya himself says, Lo nitzricha ela afilu tavra gami chadati. The chiddush is, in this second version, Abaya himself is explaining what he himself said. When I said that everybody agrees that tavra gami is allowed, what I meant is that even a new one that's never been used yet. Why? What's the chiddush? Now to tame a mimlach v'leitavra Allah, because you might think it's new. The person might change his mind. They decide, you know what? I don't want to cut up the meat on it after all. I don't want to ruin it. Basically, muksmach mas chesaron kis, kind of. So therefore, kamash malon, that's the chiddush. Since it's meant for chopping up meat, then we're not worried about that. So you're telling me then that Bishamai is not worried about you changing your mind? So therefore we're saying that even a new tavragami, even a new chopping block you're allowed to use, and we're not worried that you may decide to save it? Vatanya, but we learn in a braisa, you're not allowed to bring the shochet and the knife to the animal, or to bring the animal to where the shochet and the knife are, so they have to all be together in the same place, otherwise you can't carry one to the other. And we're assuming the reason is because, let's say you carry the knife over there, the shochet is not really an issue. Obviously the shochet can walk from one place to another, but the knife, let's say you carry it to the animal, afterwards maybe you change your mind, you decide, you know what, I don't want to shack this animal, you carry the knife for no reason. And Basil says you are allowed to carry one to the other.
Even if you change your mind.
No, because they're not worried about you changing your mind. Another example, that Bishama is saying you're not allowed to bring spices and a spice grinder to, tavlin, spices, and a pestle, etzel meducha, to the mortar. Mm-hmm. So you have a mortar in one place, you have spices and a pestle in another place, you can't bring one to the other. V'loy meducha etzel tavlin umodich, or you can't bring the mortar to where the spices and the pestle are. Or Basil says you are allowed to carry one to the other. So therefore, it sounds like Bishama is concerned about that you might change your mind. You might decide not to shech this animal or not to grind up these spices, then you carried for no reason, whereas Basil is not worried about it. And so we see Bishama is worried about you changing your mind. Right. Why with a new tavragami? Why with a new chopping block are we not worried about that?
Right. He would be worried to change the mind in terms of mukti. Is that what you're saying?
Not so much in terms of mukti, but in terms of you've done a tircha that's unnecessary.
Okay.
You've carried something that's unnecessary.
Right.
Yeah. The Gemara says, "Hachi hashta." How could you think to compare the two? Bishleima behema asil imlochi. Okay, when it comes to an animal for shechting, I can understand. Yes, you might change your mind. Da ama nishba kai behema kosher, because the person might think to himself, "You know what? Let me forget about this animal is skinny. Or my sinah behema achrinah deshmeinu minah, and I'll go get another animal which is fatter." So yes, it may have happened, for example, that you bring the knife to where this animal is, and then you decide, you know what? I can't bother with the skinny one.
Nishbak.
Let me leave alone. Hi, behemah chusha. This is the thin animal.
Thin.
Yeah, or my sinah, and I'll bring behemah chrit to the shmeinim. You know, another animal that's fatter than it. Kedera nami. Similarly, when it comes to a pot of food that you want to grind up spices for, asilim lochi. Again, the person might decide to change his mind. The amar, he'll think to himself, you know what? Nishbak hai kedera. Forget about. I won't make this kind of dish. Rashi says, for example, let's say, so I won't cook meat or onions which need spices. Instead, my sinah achriti, and I'll go make another one instead. Delay boy a tavlin that won't need spices. For example, Rashi says cabbage or turnips. So therefore, there's reason in those cases to say that, yes, you might change your mind and decide, you know what, I don't need this animal or I don't need these spices. Hacha Michael Memo here, what are you going to say as far as the animal's already shechted? You're talking about cutting up the meat. Mimlach v'leitavar. You're going to change your mind and not want to break it up and not want to cut it up. Kibin de shachta, once you shechted it already, l'tavirakaimer, it has to be cut up. So there's no possibility even that Bishama is going to say you're going to change your mind and decide not to chop up this hunk of meat, because what else are you going to do with it?
Right.
So therefore, there's no question, even a new tavragami, a new chopping block, you're allowed to.
And that's why
we're saying that.
Because you cannot change your mind.
Right. Then the Mishnah had said, Bishama said you can't put the skin of the animal down where people are going to trample it. And that you're not even allowed to pick it up unless there's a kazayisim meat on it. Tana, but we learn in a braisa, v'shavin, both b'shama and b'shul agui, shemochen ala basal atzli, that you are allowed to salt meat for roasting on top of it. Now, roasting...
What's the question, in other words?
In other words, like this. What you do is, you spread out the skin on the ground.
Yeah.
You spread out the skin on the ground, or on a table, or whatever. You take the meat, and you put... You take the meat, and you put it on there, and salt it a little bit.
Right.
Inevitably, some of the salt spills onto the leather.
Right.
So that way, you're starting the process of tanning it that way. You're starting the process of preserving it that way.
Wow.
That you're allowed to do, because you're not doing it fundamentally as directly trying to tan the leather.
Indirectly.
You're just doing it as an indirect thing. However, this is only talking about if you're roasting it, the kind that if you're salting it, the kind of salting that you do for roasting, which you don't salt it very much. Then Rashi says that you just salt it for flavor, basically. Tosfos says a little Rashi says that Rashi seems to be saying that you do need to salt it, even when you're roasting meat. Even though the roasting, we know there's two ways of getting the blood out of meat, right? Either you salt it and soak it the usual way, or you roast it. Rashi seems to be saying that even for roasting, you do need to salt it a little bit, and that is in fact the halacha. You don't need, when you're roasting meat, you don't need to salt it as heavily as we do regular meat that's going to be cooked, but you do need to salt it a little bit to help the fire draw out the blood. Yeah, Tosfos says not even necessarily. All you need is, just as a practical matter, people salt their roast a little bit so it has a flavor.
Okay.
Either way, the point is we're not talking about very much meat. We're not talking about very much salt. But if you're salting it to the point, to the amount that you need in order to cook it in a pot, because that's already, you're putting so much salt on it that amount of salt that's going to spill off the meat onto the skin, that already we're not going to be matter that kind of thing.
Even if it's, you put it on one part of the animal instead of the whole animal.
We'll talk about moving it from one part to the other soon. Actually, we'll get to that.
Okay.
The Gemara says pshita. Well, of course, let's lead on. The Braisa had said that the Braisa had said specifically you're roasting it for you're salting it for roasting.
Like Hadara, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
The answer is hakamash malon. What Abaya means to tell us that filo letzli kein kadera also. Even if you mean to roast it, but you're salting it to the same extent as you usually salt kosher meat for to cook in a pot, is also. In other words, the point is not the purpose to which you're planning to put the meat, the way in which you're planning to cook
amount.
It, but rather the amount of salt you're using.
Regardless of the intent.
Right. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, in mochun asachalavim, you're not allowed to salt the fat from the animal. So now you cut apart the animal, you took out the fat that you're not allowed to eat, and now you don't want it to spoil before the end of Yom Tov. So one thing you might do is salt it.
Well, you're not supposed to eat them.
You can eat them, but you can still use them.
For what, for instance?
For example, you can use them for candles, tallow. You can use them for candles, you can use them for making soap, you can use them for different types of industrial activities, yeah. The Pasuk specifically says that chelev nevelev, a chelev terefa, it says, ya'asa l'chol malacha, it can be used for any kind of work, va'achal lo yisechlu, you're just not allowed to eat it.
So it's pshita, isn't it, for Yom Tov?
No. So that's what we're saying. So you're not allowed to salt them because they have no purpose on Yom Tov.
No eating value, so to speak.
No, wait. I mean, but on the other hand, you might have thought that. Wait. We're going to get to it because on the other hand, you might take the view: if a person's not going to be allowed to do anything with the fat, then he may not bother shechting the animal in the first place, and then he's going to lose out on Simchas Yom Tov. So maybe you should allow.
So
him
there
to
is an application for Simchas Yom Tov.
No. So all this time we've been saying that Basil is saying we're going to be matter various things because of Simchas Yom Tov.
Right.
Maybe this is one of them.
Maybe. Okay.
So that's why we need to say this. The ein mahapchin behen, you're not allowed to turn them over. Right, to same idea, to air them out. Mishum Rabbi Yeshua, Amru, in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, they said, no, actually, in fact, it's true, you're not allowed to do those, but Shoitchan Baruch Agabi Yesegis, you are allowed to spread them out in the wind, in the air, on top of pegs. So it's true, you're not allowed to salt it, because that would be an actual thing of Ibud. Now, Ibud, by the way, the concept of Ibud does not apply to food. That is why you're allowed to salt the meat on Yom Tov, because we don't say it's a malacha of ma'abed, because ma'abed doesn't apply to food. Chalev's not food, so therefore the din of ibud would apply to it. So fine, Rabbi Yeshua agrees you can't do that, but Rabbi Yeshua is saying what you can do is stick some, you have some pegs stuck in the ground, like a framework of pegs, kind of like a frame, and you spread out the fat on top of that to keep cool. That you're allowed to do, he said.
To keep cool,
so it doesn't spoil.
So
it doesn't spoil.
Abed is what again?
But it's still not Yom Tov.
Abed is what?
Abed is tanning leather or whatever. So.
But I mean, to keep it cool so they don't destroy has nothing to do with Yom Tov.
No, but that's what we're saying, is that we're Rabbi Yeshua is allowing it because otherwise you're going to forget about shechting the animal altogether. You don't want to lose all that valuable fat.
Not to lose the so to speak, on the chelev, you're going to avoid shechting the animal. Basically.
Right. and we don't want that to happen.
We don't want
so therefore, Rabbi Yeshua is allowing you at least to put it out over a framework, which at least is not any real any real malacha. It's just a matter of moving something that's mukta, and Rabbi Yeshua is allowing it. Amar of Masna halacha could Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Masna says halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua. Ikud Amri, but others say Amar of Masna ain halacha could Rabbi Yeshua. That the second version is on the contrary. Rabbi Masna said halacha is not like Rabbi Yeshua, which in fact is the halacha.
That it's not.
That it's not. So therefore, you're not allowed to put the chalif on a frame. What you are allowed to do with it, we'll talk about in a minute. So the Gemara says, "Bishlem the mandar ma'alacha k'rav Yeshua." Okay, I can understand according to the first version that Rav Masna said the halacha is like Rav Yeshua. I would understand why he needed to say that. It's right. We needed him to say because sarkadai dechamina. We would have thought to say yachid v'rab ma'alacha k'rabim. The rule is usually we go when there's a yachid arguing against the rabim, then you go according to the yachid. Here, Rav Yeshua is saying something. The chachamim presumably disagree with him. They're saying you're not allowed to do anything with the chalif. He's saying yes. So according to that first version, we understand why he has to specifically say. Nevertheless, in this case, we break the rule and the halacha is like Rav Yeshua. Ella. But according to the second version that he said the halacha is not like Rabbi Yeshua, pshita, well, of course, yachid v'rabim halacha k'rabim. In general, whenever you have an individual against the rabbim, the halacha is like the rabbim. So there's no question, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yeshua. Why do we even need to say so?
But at first place also, Rabbi Yeshua was a yachid.
So if we say halacha k'rabbi Yeshua, that means we're breaking our usual rule. But to say ain halacha k'rabbi Yeshua, you don't need to say that. It just means the usual rule applies. The answer is ma'u detaimim estaber time into Rabbi Yeshua. Still, you might have thought Rabbi Yeshua has a very logical point. De'ilah shorisle, if you don't allow him to do something with the chaylev, mimna, he's going to hold himself back, v'loy shachet, and he's not going to end up shechting. Kamash malon, that's why Rabbi Masna has to tell us that nevertheless, even though that's so logical, nevertheless, we can't accept that. We can't, the halacha can't be like Rabbi Yeshua.
Because you could have thought that, you know, he would have lost, he would have shechted. And then it's not like him.
So the Gemara says, "Ma'ishnama erlifnei ador." So what's the difference between that and the leather, where we said not where we said that where with the leather also the skin, the skin. What is Beis Hillel saying? You're allowed to move it, and you're allowed to put it down someplace where people will trample on it.
Right.
Presumably, because of the same idea. If you don't allow him to, he's not going to sheft.
That's a sheft.
So what's the difference?
Right.
The answer is hasam lemucha milsa. There, it's not so obvious that he's doing it in order to tan it, because mishum dechazi lemizgale. Because after all, like we said yesterday, the skin is suitable for leaning on, for sitting on the ground. So yes, it may not be the normal thing to do while it's still fresh, but it can be done. So therefore, when somebody sees you putting it down on the ground, they're not going to think, "Hey, he's doing a malacha of tanning." They're going to think he's putting it down because he wants a place to sit down. Hacha, on the other hand, Asi Lameima, he himself might start thinking, "My time is shorter li Rabbanan. After all, why are the Rabbanan allowing me to do something with this, to spread out this fat on the poles? Kiyecha delay lisrach, in order that it shouldn't spoil. Well, then mali mishtachinu, mali lemimlchinu. So what's the difference between spreading them out and actually salting them? We're actually salting them would definitely be also, because that would be ma'abed. So therefore, there's reason to distinguish between the skin and the fat. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Meleach Adam Kama Chatichas Basa Bevasachas. A person is allowed to salt many pieces of meat together. Afa Pishet Etzarach El Lachaticha Achas. Even if he only needs the one piece.
But we just said previously that he's not supposed to do it.
We said don't do it on the skin. Here we're talking about just loose pieces. On the other hand, Rav Ada Ba'Ava Marim Umalach Garma Garma. Rav Ada Ba'Ava used to play a trick. What he would do is he'd salt one, gama gama means one bone, one joint at a time. He'd salt one, and then he'd say, "You know what? I'd rather have this one." So he'd salt that next one, and so forth until he did all of them. Even though, this way. I mean, if you need all the meat, obviously there's no question you can salt it. What we're talking about over here is you don't need all of it, so therefore you can't just be salting it on Yom Tov for no purpose. So now this
thing—that's the way to do it.
So now it's interesting because this thing of Rav Ada Ba'Ava, neither the Rambam nor the Tur quotes it. So that leads some Mefarshim to say that maybe the halacha is in fact not like that, or maybe some Rishonim argue that maybe only a Talmud Chacham is allowed to do this kind of thing, but a regular person we don't allow them
because
this kind of subterfuge.
Rambam doesn't mention it, and
because the Rambam and the Torah don't mention it. On the other hand, the Taz points out they didn't need to. We had before the case about salting meat on top of the skin, where you're allowed to salt it for roasting on top of the skin. Right. Now, necessarily, if we're talking about only salting one piece, then of course it's not going to cover the whole thing. Necessarily. necessarily we have to be talking about a case like this where you have a lot of meat, or you're moving it around from one place to each time you salt a different piece of meat on top of a different piece. So once they mention that din, they don't need to mention this din. And in fact, the Altareba paskens in Shulchan Aruch that according to you are allowed to do it this way. In the big Shulchan Aruch brings it also.
The rationale being, if you did it for the skin, then you don't have to do it again.
No, not if it... Once we're saying that you're allowed to do it in a certain way for the skin,
right,
for roasting, then automatically it means out that you're allowed to do something right like this to be able to right to salt a lot of meat, even though you only need some of it,
right,
because you do a harama like this. Having said that, though, the one condition that it says in Shulchan Aruch is that... is that there's still time in the day to eat it.
Okay, so if you arrive plug minfo, or...
Yeah, if it's late in the day, then this doesn't work. Well, not any day of Yom Tov, because you can't prepare from one day of Yom Tov to the next. Mishnah says, "Bishamah omrim ein mesalkin esatrius sin be Yom Tov." Bishamah says you're not allowed to take down the shutters on Yom Tov.
Right.
Or Vesila matir naflahachsu, and Vesila says you're even allowed to put them back.
That's the box.
That's my trisin. What kind of shutters are we talking about? Amaula trisin chanurius. We mean the shutters of stores, as we described yesterday. You have these box-like stores.
Right.
You have similar ones nowadays in some places. They had this shutter, which they'd use it to close up the window of the store, and during the daytime they'd put it down and use it as a counter.
Mm-hmm. Actually, they have a picture over here. You understand?
Okay. Yeah.
It's like a shape of a tent.
Okay.
And it's
that's easy enough to imagine. Yeah.
Nothing to.
Okay.
It becomes a counter.
Okay. No. The Amarula, and so now, what's the issue with taking off these trisin? The issue is going to be we're assuming, as we'll go through the Gemara, that the issue is a matter of binyan and stira. It's a matter of building and destroying. Where when you're taking down the shutter, it's like stira, and when you're putting it back, it's like binyan. So for Amar Ula says, Shlosha Dvarim Hitiru Seifen Mishum Tchilasan. There are three cases where the Chachamim allowed you to do something at the end in order that you'll want to do the thing at the beginning. Ve'eluhain, Or Lifnei Adarson. One is the case from the previous Mishnah, but putting down the leather to be trampled on. Or Trisei Chanuyas, and the second case is our Mishnah about the shutters of the stores. V'achzaras Ratiyah B'mikdash. And the third one is putting back on a poultice, a bandage, in the Bais Mikdash.
Ratia is a bandage.
It's more than just a bandage. It's a bandage that has a kind of ointment on it. A dressing is maybe a better term for it.
Sofan mishum tchilatan.
We'll talk about soon what this means. Sofan mishum tchilatan. V'rachva Amar Rabbi Yehuda, and Rachva says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, even though it says here Rabbi Yehuda, by the way, Rashi quotes
right,
that, so maybe it means that Rachva is not sure whether it's Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya or Rav Yehuda the Amora. Rashi says that no. I mean, come on, Rachva was from Pumbedisa, so we never find he was in Eretz Yisrael.
How do we know what we're talking about? We said
Rachva. This is in Baba. So no, Rashi says, and Tosfos also agrees, that what we mean is he learned under Rav Yehuda the Amora, the famous Rav Yehuda that we have throughout Shas. Rav Yehuda usually Amar Shmuel, or sometimes Amar Rav. Rachva was his Talmud. But Rachva was such a Talmud Muvak of his, Rav Yehuda was his only Rebbe, that he called him Rabbi Yehuda, meaning Rabbi, my own Rebbe, Yehuda, as opposed to just Rav Yehuda.
Talmud Muvak.
Yeah. Anyway, so Rachva says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, there's a fourth case where the Chachamim allowed the end of something in order that you'll be willing to do the beginning, namely, when a person opens up a barrel of wine or begins selling bread from a batch of dough during Yom Tov.
Are you sure it's selling, or it doesn't mean making the dough?
No, I mean, well, selling it to the Ami Aretz. What we're talking about is like this. We know that we know it's a commonplace thing throughout Shas that Amei Aretz we always assume are Becheskas Tumah, because you can't expect an Amei Aretz to know the details of the dinim of Tumah V'Tara.
Right.
When it comes to Shalosh Regalim, though, Chayav Adam L'Tar Atzma B'Regal, a person has a mitzvah to make himself Tahar come Yom Tov, and the Gemara and the Gemara at the end of Chagiga talks about. So we'll get to it during Aseres Me'Tshuva that based on a pasuk Kol Yisrael Chaverim, that when all the Jewish people are gathering together to Yerushalayim for the Shalosh Regalim, then they're all temporarily considered Chaverim. They're all considered Tamar Chachamim, and we're not worried about Tumah among them.
Because they can share?
Or that's what we're saying. Because when they're all coming to Yerushalayim, we want them to all be able to share.
Right.
The Rebbe has a sicha in Chelek Lamed Zayin that talks about all the pros and cons. Why indeed does this halacha apply, and why do we say, which the Gemara is going to say in a minute, the din is actually now. So one second as background. So now like this. So normally during the year, if an Amaret touches food, for example, it becomes tummy. We're saying during the Shalosh Regalim not, because we consider him a chaver. What happens though to food that the Amaret touched during Yom Tov, and now Yom Tov is over? Do we say that it's tummy now? Because after all, he did touch it, and retroactively, it's considered tummy, or not?
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, if during Yom Tov he was not tummy.
During Yom Tov, he was considered a chaver. We suspended the usual concern about tumah v'tahara as far as him. But maybe all that means is after Yom Tov, we retroactively apply
come back.
Or maybe not.
In other words,
the halacha, in fact,
virtually during Yom Tov he was not tummy. But in fact, after Yom Tov, he was still considered.
Right. So the halacha is, in fact, that we do consider that. We do say that.
After Yom Tov.
After Yom Tov. Retroactively, that food that he touched is tummy. So the Rebbe talks about in Chelek Lamed Zayin all the different possibilities, why we have this din that the Amei Aretz are tahor during the Yom Tovim, and why we apply it retroactively afterwards. The gist of it is that Rebbe ends up saying, after going through and trying out and discarding various possible answers, that Rebbe says the gist of it is because during Yom Tov, everybody is a tzibur. A tzibur is a different metzius than a bunch of yichidim. Sort of like dechuyah and hotzur, but not really. But yeah,
right.
When they're a tzibur, then yes, we apply them. But after all, they are all individual yichidim as well. So therefore, after Yom Tov, we look at the fact that ultimately all this time they were yichidim.
What kind of tumah did we anticipate?
The regular kind of tumah. It could be, for example, tumah. It could be tumas mess, although I think the Gemara says there we're not so worried about tumas mess because I may already know how serious that is.
Right.
But there's other kinds of tumas. The tumah, zav, nida, cheretz, etc.
What would we say today? I mean, it's
today everybody's tumah anyway. It's irrelevant.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, but there is an opinion, Rabbi Yehuda says there in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, this is the Tanna, Rabbi Yehuda, says there in Chagiga, that suppose now you have, let's say, a chaver has a wine store, and during Yom Tov, he opened up a barrel of wine before Yom Tov, and during Yom Tov, he was selling wine from it to the Amei Aretz. Each Amei Aretz comes in with his dipper or his bottle or whatever, fills up a bottle from it, pays, and goes. So each Amei Aretz has touched the contents of the barrel during Yom Tov.
Right.
Now, after Yom Tov, do we say that whatever's left in the barrel becomes Tamei, or not? Rabbi Yehuda says not.
Based on,
because he's saying, once we said it was Tahar during Yom Tov, then it stays Tahar for afterwards.
So it's more than virtual.
So according to him, it's more than virtual. Only if after Yom Tov, when an Amaret touches it, then it would become Tamei. Similarly with dough. A chaver, again, similar idea. A chaver started a batch of dough before Yom Tov. During Yom Tov, he's selling pieces of it to Amei Aretz. You know, they each break off their piece and then so forth. Same idea.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Chachamim say no.
Yeah, the Chachamim say no. So Rachva is saying the name of Rav Yehuda, the Amorah, that here's a fourth case where we see that the Chachamim allowed something at the end because of the beginning. This case of opening up a barrel or starting off a batch of dough but at the beginning of Yom Tov. And this would be according to Rav Yehuda. Da'ama Yigma, who says he's allowed to finish it, it's still considered Tahar until the barrel is empty or the dough is
after
used.
After Yom Tov.
After Yom Tov, yeah.
Although it's Tamei according to...
Yeah, according to the Chachamim, it would be Tamei, yeah.
Right, and not to him. Yeah.
So, each of these things we're going to go through now, but first of all, the Gemara asks, Erlefnei Adoros and Tanena. So what is Ola saying? Ola is telling us there's three things, or according to Rachba, four things, that the Chum allowed the end of something, because if you don't allow him the last stage in the process, he's not going to do the earlier stage. But why does Ola need to say that? All of them we see explicitly in Mishnayos. Erlefnei Adoros and Tanena, the one about the leather, about the skin, with people stepping on it, the Mishnah had explicitly said. So what is Ola accomplishing? We don't need Ola just to summarize for us, so we need him to be telling us something new.
Right.
The answer is, you might have thought that Basilel's reason why they allow him to put down the skin there on the ground is because, like we said, it's possible to rest on it. And therefore, so therefore it should be allowed, even if you shechted the animal and skinned it before Yom Tov, you should be allowed to do the same thing. Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush, that they only allowed it at the end because of the beginning, because if you don't allow him to do something with the skin, he's not going to shech the animal at all. And therefore, to Yom Tov Ein, to Erev Yom Tov Lai. So therefore, it only applies to the skin of an animal you shechted on Yom Tov, not one that you shechted Erev Yom Tov. Because then, he didn't do anything with it on Erev Yom Tov, tough luck on him.
Too bad.
Yeah.
You could have thought that...
Yeah. I mean, actually, what Rashi says a little bit differently, that if even if you don't allow him to spread it out on the ground on Yom Tov, fine, he knows he's able to spread it out on Erev Yom Tov, so that's not going to prevent him from shechting Erev Yom Tov, because he knows he still has what he's able to do with the skin. So that's the chiddush of that one. Similarly, the next one, Trisi Chanuyas Nami Tanena, didn't we learn explicitly in the Mishnah, in our Mishnah, about the shutters of the stores, so why does Ola need to mention it?
Right.
And again, Uvisila Matir Nafla Achsid, Uvisila allows you to put it back. And again, the answer is, Ma'u Detema, Ta'i Ma'u Uvisila Mishum De'en Binyan B'kelem Be'en Stira B'kelem. You might have thought that Uvisila's reason why they allow it is because the concept of building and destroying does not apply to Kelim. Mm. There may be other Malachas involved, Makar B'Patish, etc.
Are those Kelim? But can you say they're Kelim?
These boxes are Kelim, yeah. These box-like stores are Kelim, yeah. But therefore, if Basil held that way, then actually they would say that even the shutters of actual houses,
which are not Kelim,
would also...
So how can you say that then?
Because they would be saying that... because they would be saying like this, that if... No, so actually, sorry, bottom over here does not mean ones attached to the ground. When we say bottom over here, it means even, for example, closets in houses.
Uh-huh.
That maybe they would allow it, even if it's inside the house. It's a Kaylee, so yeah.
Okay, that's
Kamash, so that's why he's telling us, he's Tirin Sofer from Rishim Tchilasim, the Chanuyas and the bottom loy, only ones of actual, of freestanding stores, but not ones of closets or whatever, even if the store, in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about what if the store is inside a house. Then also you can't put back the shutter, according to Basil. Because there's no reason to. You can just close up the house and it'll be safe that way.
And that's probably why they authorize it.
That's why they're authorizing it. Kamash Malani, Tir Sofer from Rishim Tchilasim, the Chanuyas and the Batim Loy, only the ones from stores, not the ones from inside the houses. Because of the stores, if you don't allow him to close it up, he's not going to want to open on Yom Tov. Right. Nobody's going to be able to get spices. They're going to lose out on Simchas Yom Tov. Whereas if it's inside the house, it's not an issue. And the third one, Chazoras Yotiyah B'Mikdash Nami Tanena. What about the one of putting back a dressing in the Bis Mikdash? Didn't the Mishnah also say, Machzirim Yotiyah B'Mikdash Avaloi B'Medina? A Kohen is allowed to put back, we learned at the end of Erevin, is allowed to put back on a dressing in the Bis Mikdash, but not elsewhere. Mm. What are we talking about? We're talking about, let's say, for example, a Kohen has a wound on his hand, on his finger, let's say. On one of the fingers of his right hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so he has a dressing on it. And the dressing has some kind of ointment or something.
That's
which
before
when you put it before Shabbos or before Yom Tov,
right?
So now he needs to take it off. He needs to take it off in order to do the avodah, because if he otherwise it'll be chatzitza.
Right.
But again, if you don't allow him to put it back, he's not going to want to take it off in the first place, and then he's going to miss out on doing the avodah. Mm. So therefore, we allowed it.
Right.
So then, in that case, what does Ula need to tell us?
Right.
The answer is Ma'u Detema, Taima Mai. You might have thought that what's the reason why he's allowed to put it back? Mishum De'en Shavus B'Mikdash. Because in general, Dinim D'Rabbanan do not apply in the B'Mikdash. What are we worried about? He's putting on the dressing he might come to smooth it out. That kind of thing is only Asur D'Rabbanan. Or it actually gives a different possibility why the dressing might be Asur. Because in general, you're not allowed to put on medicines and dressings and whatnot on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. So therefore, you might have thought that in that case, the whole concept doesn't even apply in the Bais Mikdash. And therefore, I feel a kohen de lav bar avodahu. So maybe therefore it applies even to a kohen who's not currently engaged in doing avodah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, for example, he has to take off the bandage for a different reason. Let's say to wash his hands or something.
That's because it shouldn't be allowed in general, we're saying.
No, so we're saying it should be allowed in general, we would think, in the Bais Mikdash.
In general, yeah.
Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush. Yitiru Seifim, Mishum Tchilasan, that only the Chachamim allowed the end because of the beginning. Devar Avoda Ein, Delav Bar Avoda Loi. Only if he's doing the Avoda. So if he took off the bandage for some other reason, then yes, even in the Bais Mikdash, we're going to apply that Shavuos and not allow him to put it back on. But if we're making him take it off in order to do the Avoda, then fine, we'll allow him to put it back on. Then the fourth one, the one that Rachva mentioned, Poseach Chavisa Nami Tanena. Didn't we learn the case about opening up a barrel? Is also in the Mishnah at the end of Chagiga. Poseach Chavisa Umaschavi Sase Agav Regel. A person opens up a barrel of wine or begins a batch of dough with Yom Tov coming. Rabbi Yehuda Ami Yigmer. Rabbi Yehuda says he's allowed to finish it off after Yom Tov, because again, the fact that the Ami Aretz touched it during Yom Tov doesn't matter. They were considered Chavedim at the time, so they're we don't retroactively apply it. And the Chacham say you're not allowed to finish it. So we see the Mishnah clearly mentions that case. What is Rachva adding?
Right.
The answer is You might have thought that in general, we say the truma of Ava Oretz during Yom Tov is considered that the Chachamim treat it like Tara. We said Keish Echad Chaverim.
Beregel Tara.
Beregel only on Yom Tov. We consider the Ava Oretz to be Tahar on Yom Tov. Right. We're not worried about that. Obviously, if he's definitely Tameh, he's definitely Tameh. Right. But we're not worried about the usual Chashash of truma of Ava Oretz during Yom Tov. The Afagabdullahis Shavu Rabbanan, the Rabbanan made it. The Rabbanan considered it. So therefore, Va'afagabdullahis Chunami. So therefore, it should apply even if you didn't actually start the batch. What if, for example? So what happens? For example, let's say you had a barrel of wine, you didn't actually start selling anything from it yet, and an Amah Aretz touched it. If during Yom Tov, if we're saying as a blanket statement that we consider them tahar, then it wouldn't be an issue according to Rabbi Yehuda. Kamash Malani Tiras Sofin Mishum Tchilasa. No, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, the heter is only we're allowing you the end because otherwise you won't want to start off on it. So therefore, hischol ein lo hischolai. Only if you started selling it, but not if you didn't start selling it. Then Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it's tamei retroactively.
Even if the bottle is closed, do you say it's tummy?
No, if the bottle is closed, that's a different issue. Then it depends what kind of keli we're talking about. Whether the avaritz can make a tummy, it also depends whether he just touches it or whether he picks it up, etc. Those are other dinim. But anyway, let's say the barrel was open and Amaretz touched it, but you didn't actually start selling anything from it yet. Yes, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. There's no soifin meshum tchilasan. You wouldn't say if I knew I can't use any of this after Yom Tov, I would have never opened the barrel.
Because
it was open already. So therefore, you don't have that heter.
As opposed to if
we just said katara shavir rabbanan, that we just consider the Amaretz to be tahar as a blanket statement, then yes, we'd allow it.
That would really ruin a lot of the achters. That
no, it just means that usually a chaver would have to.
No. If they didn't know Rabbi's opinion.
No, well, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, but everybody agrees that during Yom Tov the stuff is considered tahor. So during Yom Tov, Amei Aretz can be coming into the store to buy, Chaverim can be coming in, everybody can be taking and eating and drinking and having a grand old time. The question is, if you, a chaver, have any of that wine that you bought from the store left over after Yom Tov, or if the storekeeper himself has some of the wine left over, what happens to that? But by that time, the Amei Aretz have already gone home. If you have to spill out the wine because of that, they won't know the difference.
Right.
What they don't know can't hurt them.
No. Apparently, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
That's why they Amei Aretz.
Yeah. No, Amei Aretz could be pretty smart people that just don't know the halachas.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, for Ula my time ala Omaha, so why didn't Ula mention this case also of the barrel or the wine or the dough?
Right.
But the answer is Plumta like Hamari. He's not listing any case that involves machloikas. That one is Rabbi Yehuda versus the Chachamim. So therefore, he has no need to mention it.
Because
it's a machloikas. Ula is only mentioning things where it's unanimously agreed that he tira seif mishum tchilasim. Why? All these other cases that he mentioned, two of the cases are also machlokes.
Right.
Shammai argued about the leather, about the skin, and they argued about the tirsin.
Right.
The answer is, Bes Shammai, Bes Hillel, and a Mishnah. As a general rule, when we have Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel together, we have the opinion of Bes Shammai, where Bes Hillel disagrees with them, then what Bes Shammai says is not even considered a Mishnah. It's not even a potential, it can't even be potentially the halacha.
As opposed to the Chachamim.
When it comes to Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, potentially the halacha could have been decided like Rabbi Yehuda. Mm-hmm. Usually Yochid V'Rab Malacha could have been, but there are always exceptions, like we thought to say before about Rabbi Yehuda. But Bishama and Basil, it's always a given the halacha is like Basil, except for a few cases. So the Gemara says, Masnissin Deloiki Hai Tana. Now our Mishnah seems to not be like the following Tana. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Amr Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Moidim Bishama Bisil Shemasalkanis Atrisin Biyamtav. Both Bishama and Bisil agree that you're allowed to take down the shutter on Yamtav to use it as a counter. The Machlokas is only as far as putting it back. Bishama says you can't put it back, and Bisil says you can. Which, therefore, the reason would be taking them down you need for Simchas Yamtav. Even Bishama has no problem with that. Putting him back, though, that would be the argument whether we're allowing Sif. Continues the Braisa. When is this talking about? When the shutter has a hinge pin, actually. Tzirim, hinges in those days were not like the hinges like we have on our doors nowadays that are on the side. We've talked about this before in Erevin, for example, Machzir and Tzirim Mikdash. Hinges in those times went on, usually they went on the top. they usually went on the top and on the bottom of the door, sort of like if you think of these little Lego doors.
Okay.
They, you know, they have one pin that goes up here,
so
that goes into a hole in the...
Like this? They used to...
No. It could be like this, but it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a door like this or a door like this. Whatever the case, it had two pins, one on each end, usually, where one would go into the top and into the lintel of the door, and the other one would go into the threshold.
Right.
So if the door has a tzir, if the door has a hinge, then that's the machlokes. Aval ein lahen tzir. But if the door has no hinges at all, divrei hakol mutter, then everybody would agree it's mutter, because then there's no, you can't talk about binyan and tzira at all. It's a piece of wood that you're sticking into a hole.
Right.
But we learn a brayso b'men v'mamun b'shein lahen tzir, that when is this, when is the machlokes when they do have a hinge? Aval yesh when they don't have a hinge, rather. Aval yesh lahen tzir divrei hakol aser. But if they have hinges, everybody agrees it's aser. So that directly contradicts. So what is it? Is it that everybody allows it only when there's no hinge? Or is it that Beis Hillel allows it even if it has a hinge?
Because from here we see it's
two different prices that contradict each other.
There is no hinge.
Amar Abaya, b'sheyesh lahen tzir min atzad, if they have hinges on the side, the normal kind of thing like I was just describing, where you have a hinge here and a hinge here on one side, and you swing it open and close like that, divrei hakol aser. Then everybody agrees it's aser to take it out and put it back, because then that's real binyan. That's making a more or less permanent kind of thing in place.
Two hinges, one on top, one on bottom.
Yeah. It's more either because it's binyan or because there's a real possibility, we talked about in Erevin, that you might actually take a hammer and bang the hinges into place.
And when you have one?
On the other hand, ein lahen tzir kol ikur, if they have no hinge at all, divrei hakol mutter, then everybody agrees it's mutter. Ki pligi b'sheyesh lahen tzir be'emtza. The machlokas is if it has a hinge on one side in the middle. So here's the shutter. You have, instead of having a hinge on top and on bottom over here, where then you can just swing it open, it has one pin on the side over here that goes into a hole in the frame. Mm-hmm. So you put it in like that.
Put it
and
in.
You, yeah.
Right.
So
it's not a rotation.
It's not really. Yeah. So Mar Sova Gazrin and Sirva Emtsa Otsu Tsirman Atzad. So Bishama is saying that you make a gzera about having a hit, even one pin in the middle, because you might confuse it with two pins that are on the sides. Mm-hmm. One, if you're going to allow him to put back one that has one pin, he might forget and put back one that has two pins. Umar Sava La Gazrin, and whereas Bisil, or not Bishama, Bisil, rather. The two Brises. You're talking about Bishama, Bisil, yeah. So the two Brises then don't and Masava La Gazrin, and Bishama, Bisil says we're not Gozer. So the two Brises are not contradictory. The first Brise that says Bishyesh Lahen Sir, that the Machloikas is when it has a hinge, means when it has a pin, means it has one pin. That's what we're saying.
Pin.
One pin is on one side, in the middle of it, is when Bishama is saying it's also, because we might confuse it with two pins, and Bisil is saying is mutter.
How can we confuse one with two?
Because once you're allowed to put something in with a pin, then you might confuse it with other ones that have pins.
Okay.
Whereas the second braisa that said only if it does not have a hinge, but if it has hinges, then everybody agrees it's also, that's what we're talking about, two hinges, two pins. Mm-hmm. Which then, yes, Basil agrees is also as well, either because that's binyan, it's actually building something, or because you might hammer it in place.
And Bishamai?
And Bishamai, of course,
thing.
Says it's also.
Right,
yeah.
But for the same reason?
Yeah, for the same reason, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he said,